Bow chicka bow well, spread those pages. Yeah.
Courtney, that needs to be a jingle, like a for real jingle. Get on it.
I'm Courtney.
And I'm Meg.
And we're the hosts of the Spread Those Pages podcast, a romance lovers podcast where we like our books how we like our coffee. Hot.
So sit back, grab your vibrator, and spread those pages.
Hi, all you badass book bitches. It's me, Courtney, and Meg. And today we interviewed a very special guest, the amazing, the incredible, the author of The Hollow Vows, Lexi Ryan. And we are so excited to share this episode with you. So stay tuned for amazingness.
It was so much fun. So we finished obviously recording the interview. And so we are here to share all of our fangirling. Went very well and we didn't embarrass ourselves. So, you know, go us.
And if we did, it's totally okay because this is our realm, our podcast. But real quick, if you haven't heard me and Meg gush about these Hollow Vows, we have an episode that should be coming soon or already is out, depending on when this posts. You should go listen to that. There will be spoilers, and there may be spoilers in this episode as well, because we ask Lexi some pretty detailed questions. So if you haven't read the book and you don't like spoilers, I would maybe hurry and go read it in like 3x speed if you like audio, and then come back to this.
I completely agree. And just to add to what Courtney just said, we did talk about these Hollow Vows in a previous episode. We also talked about the second in the duology. So if you want to hear more about the universe and stuff, there's a little bit of spoilery stuff that relates to both books. So just in case you've read one and not the other, we do talk about both and then kind of the ending of the series and, you know, hint at what could be next. Hello, everyone. Courtney and I are here with the amazing Lexi Ryan. Thank you so very much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited to see you both.
So excited. So freaking excited. You have no idea.
For our listeners, we read Lexi's book, These Hollow Vows. We also read the second in the duology. And if it's not already out by the time this episode comes out, it will be coming out soon. And Courtney and I basically just gushed about how much we love the book. So Lexi, we're so excited to talk with you about your awesome YA fantasy. So just to get things started, what was the inspiration for maybe the idea behind These Hollow Vows?
I mentioned in my other podcast I did with you that I, like, the world was a dumpster fire and there were some hard things going on in my personal life too, and that, like, I needed to be in a world where I could believe in magic and kill bad guys. But I started with this very angry protagonist in my head. I've written angry protagonists in my romances before, but not quite like this. And the first scene I wrote of her was not something that ended up in the book. You know, she was like scrubbing the floor of this guy that she was working for, and she was pissed because he was trying to get her to give sexual favors to some of his other guys. And that didn't end up in the book. She was like working so hard, like literally like raw hands from working so hard, and it was never going to be enough. And she was angry at the world she lived in. And I just wanted to tell her story. The fact that the second scene I wrote, because I'm a patchwork writer, was this shower scene, didn't hurt anything either. I don't know if you remember her being in the shower with Finn when she's drugged on fairy wine.
Yes. Yeah, that was the second one you wrote? Wow.
Such a weirdo. I can't even. Like, my process is, don't do it. Don't do it like I do it. But it's the only way I know how to write a book, and I've written, like, a lot at this point. So
do you write based on mood then? Or do you pick the scene like, this is my favorite one that I really, really want to write. This is my next favorite one.
I guess maybe sometimes it's based on mood, but more it's like what feels like it's going to go in the book. Like if I'm really not sure on a scene, I don't want to write it, because usually it's because I don't have it right yet. And I say don't have it right doesn't even mean like don't have all the details right, because I actually write really loose to begin with and then have to like layer in detail later. And I do that out of necessity, because I have to rewrite so much because I write out of order and then figure out how things fit together and then have to rewrite to make them work in that order. So it doesn't make sense to like flesh out the scene. Oh, and they're on this mountaintop, and you know, they're ravens overhead when like it might turn out that they're actually inside someone's home in front of the fire. So I write very loose to begin with. And if there are seen things that I think might be in there, I go ahead and write them if it feels right, you know. I am very much the, like, was it Michelangelo that was like, the sculpture is inside the stone. I'm just like chipping away the stone to show you what's in there. Like, I feel very much like that with stories. There's like a definite woo-woo for me. Like, I just have to find the story. And sometimes it's a little more stubborn than others. And I have to find it by putting together a puzzle in the dark where the pieces are scattered all over the place and some are missing and some are under the couch. And it feels a little bit like that, but the puzzle is there. I just have to keep working and I'll find it.
I love that so much. And you said, don't be like me. Are you kidding me? I want to be just like you. Like that, the books were just like, I'm just going to fangirl. I really enjoyed them. Like the pacing was perfect. And like at the end of it, I was like, are you fucking kidding me? I need to go. I need to go and make a Facebook status right now. And I was like, oh, and look at me. Lexi's my friend. So, you know, I was like, oh my gosh, I'm so tagging her. Like it's, I loved what you did. And even if it's patchwork, you know, I feel like authors all have their different processes and what works for you really works for you. So I appreciate your process.
I think it's good to have a process that you're like, this isn't ideal, because I'm never at risk of going around and telling people how it should be done. I am forever bemoaning how I do it. Like, oh, it's so inefficient and time consuming. And, but, so I don't have to worry that I might, you know, tell people to do it one way when they should do it another way, because I'm like, you should probably do it another way.
The world was so vast though. Like to be like, for you to be like, oh, well, I wrote this scene and that scene, and then I just kind of like put it together and rewrote some stuff. I'm like, no. In my head when I read it, I was like, this was so detailed and planned out. Like, I bet you her outline was 50,000 words just to get this.
I did write a 20-page synopsis, which is a lot. That's how I sold on proposal. But, you know, to me, I feel like it's easier to write things that feel cohesive across a big story when you do write out of order, because I'm more likely to write the scene that happens in the first third of the book with the scene that echoes it in the last third of the book. I'm likely to write those in the same day. Now I'm going to flesh out details later, but like to me, as soon as I know this, oh, you know what needs to happen before this? And like my drafts, like it's like all over the place. And I literally have to go in and cut it apart and piece it together, because partially because I didn't know what order things would go in, but in other ways, just because I wrote two things next to each other that I knew would go in way different parts of the books. It's just that they tied in so closely. I wanted to write them at the same time so that I could have the same detail, the same echo, so I could flip things around just so. And it's just always been easier for me to write that way than to try to remember later that I wanted to do a thing. Like, I'll take notes, but do I look at them? I don't know.
That's so smart. So I want to ask you a question more specifically about characters. And what was your inspiration for Abriella, Ronan, and Finn?
Okay. So I think I mentioned Abriella was just like angry at the world, which
yes,
I needed her to be, because I was working through some stuff. And so that was easy. Now, I really love to play with social expectations. The Seelie and Unseelie, for those who don't read a lot of Fae, that's not me. That's not something I ever came up with. There is a great history of lore with the Seelie Fae and the Unseelie Fae, who are so-called the good and the bad Fae. And so I love to play with social expectations of that. And I felt like it made sense to make my, in fact, initially they were written as the Court of Light and the Court of Darkness. And we were concerned that that might politically come off badly. So we changed it to the Court of the Sun and the Court of the Moon. I wanted to play with that idea. Light is good, dark is bad. And to show that like everybody's so screwed up. Like, there is no, this group of people is good, this group of people is not good. Like, it's all very complicated. Everybody has their reasons. Everybody has their own motivations. And so I wanted there to be a big contrast between Ronan and Finn, because they were the princes of opposite courts. They were in very different positions within their courts, but at the same time, while Finn is like this outcast, ostracized prince that like isn't safe to go home because his uncle has stolen the throne, Ronan is trying to please a mother who has a very complicated feelings about him and who he is and where he comes from. And so they're kind of both outcasts in their own way. So just very much playing with that like foil thing where it's like, by making them very different, we can see how similar they are.
I really liked how you didn't necessarily like villainize either one. Like, you know, while one was clearly better for Abriella than the other, you could still see admirable qualities for both.
That is so much of what appeals to me about writing, is to be able to take somebody who makes a decision that we're like, that was a bad decision, or that was a bad choice, or why would someone choose to do that? And get into their head and try to, or get into their backstory and try to figure it out in a way that I can understand it. You know, and I do this with my romance protagonists all the time. It's not always as easy as good and bad people. I don't want to say there aren't bad people. There are some people who I do think are bad people, but most of the time it's bad choices and bad decisions. And there are lots of complicated reasons behind those. And I like to dig into that and show that. I want readers to see my unlikable heroine and be like, yeah, but I get it, you know, like, I get it. And I feel like that's my job as the writer, to make them be like, yeah, I wish she hadn't done that, but yeah, maybe I would have too.
So I do want to talk a little bit more about the love triangle. And I know some people just love triangles, and some people are like, yep, nope, not for me, thank you. Could you tell us, I guess, a bit about your writing process? Why did you think Finn was the best choice for Abriella?
To speak to love triangles first, I love them. I love writing love triangles. And I know there are a lot of people who love to hate them, but man, I take such pride in people saying in review after review, I normally hate love triangles, but like that is, if there is a sentence starter that is in more of my reviews than any other sentence starter, it's probably that. I normally hate love triangles, but, because I write a lot of love triangles. It's pretty typical for me to go into a love triangle not knowing who the heroine will end up with. And I'm pretty sure I knew pretty early on with Abriella that Ronan wasn't for her. And I always wonder, like, what the point did I know that? Because it's not uncommon for me to write a book and be like, I need to finish this book, but I got to decide who she's going to be with. But I think that Finn represented so much of the journey she needed to go on, you know, like she needed to like explore her own dark side, her own shadow self, right? And he's part of that world and can represent it and can support it in a way that Ronan couldn't. Also, I feel like Ronan just, he still needs to grow up. Like he just, like we can understand why he's made a lot of the decisions he has, but he still has a lot of growing up to do. Whereas Finn is like knows who he is a little bit better.
I just want to say that when I got to like almost the end, I was like, if she doesn't end up with Finn, I swear to God, I'm going to go.
So fun story. I wanted this to be a trilogy and people were passing because it was too similar to things they'd recently acquired, whatever. And we got the offer from HMH and they were like, hey, we kind of want this, but can you make it a duology? And it's funny because, you know, traditional, they're like, oh, people get series fatigue. I was like, what are you talking about? Like, it's not happening. But my feeling was that moment when she knows that for the court, she needs to stay with Ronan was the end of book two. Like, I just, to this day, I'm like, think if that could have been the end of book two. And I could have had all of book three to torture everyone. But I've also had a lot of people who've been like, thank you for making it two books and not three. I'm glad I didn't have to wait another year. So opinions are divided. And I'm doing another duology for Jazz and Felicity. So apparently I'm not completely against them.
Ken, because I know we talked about that. Lexi, could you tease our listeners here about what is coming next?
Tease me specifically.
Yes, I get to go back to Faerie, which I'm really excited about because I love the world. I love the creatures. I love the monsters. I love the morally gray masses. The new duology is set in Faerie. It's 3 years later, and I have dual protagonists. One is Jazalyn, who's Abriella's little sister, and Jazalyn has acquired a magical ring that gives her the kiss of death. She wants to go on a vengeance spree around Court of the Moon and find everyone who tortured her while she was in Mordius's dungeons and end them. Well, her sister, there's bad stuff happening in the court, and her sister, of course, just wants to protect her. That's all Abriella wants, to protect Jazalyn. So she wants to send Jazalyn to the Wild Fae territory. So my other protagonist is Felicity, who is a shifter who can take Jazalyn's form precisely. No scent that gives her away, nothing. She physically is Jazalyn when she takes Jazalyn's form. And with her ability to shift, she gets, the night before, she gets a dream of a memory of the person she's shifting into. So she is in the Wild Fae territory, pretending to be Jazalyn and learning more and more of Jazalyn's secrets as time goes on. And Jazalyn is with this misfit band of the Lorens, who are on a quest of their own in the Unseelie Court. And she is really her ultimate goal. There's rumors that Mordius has been resurrected and she wants to find him and end him for good. It is a wild adventure. I get my two love stories because, you know, I'm a sucker for the romance, and I get my mistaken identity and my betrayal and my, oh, it's a lot of fun. I can't wait. It comes out summer of 24 is the first book, and it's called Beneath These Cursed Stars. And hopefully soon we will have a pre-order and a release date. I'm just waiting for HarperCollins to come up with that, come out with that summer schedule, and we'll have it.
That's so exciting. I'm so, so pumped. And you said it was a duology for this second one? Okay.
Yeah. Nice. Yeah. And I'm writing book two now. And once again, just like in book two of the first book, I could use another book.
I could use another book too. I know that they don't care, but oh my God. Oh my God. I am like over here just like, oh my God. We are getting more of this world. I'm so happy right now. I'm so happy. Oh my gosh.
It's
okay.
Fun. And I was glad I got to go spend more time with Misha. Initially I pitched it as a Jazalyn book, and then I was like, kind of want to spend some time with the Wild Fae King. He's kind of special to me. And then I realized, well, Jazz needs someone to be her. And it evolved from there.
I love that so much. I do have a question. Since you are a contemporary romance author, like you're known for that, and now a little spice, why fantasy, like best ever. It's fantasy is different than just contemporary, because it's like real life and contemporary. And we've got the Seelie and the Unseelie. And what sort of research went into building your world? And like the different races, and how did you settle on humans, Seelie, Unseelie, Wild Fae, and all of that specifically?
One of my favorite things about writing fantasy is that you can like dive into the mythology, but never be constrained by it. It gets to be inspiration without boxing you in. So I would think, okay, we've got Seelie and Unseelie. Where does that come from? And then, you know, you do the start with a Wikipedia deep dive, which takes you to other sources because they cite their sources on Wikipedia, y'all. You don't have to end there. You can click on their links. It's amazing. And, it, you know, like one thing leads to another. And I always like the idea of, yeah, there's the Seelie and there's the Unseelie, but then there's also like everybody else, you know? So that's why I was like, okay, we're going to have the Wild Fae. And, you know, like, are they a court? Well, they think they're a court, but the Court of the Sun and the Court of the Moon are like, no, we're the two courts, but the Wild Fae think they're a court. So there's always political stuff involved. Yeah. And I just fell down the rabbit hole, honestly. And if something worked for me, I would run with it. And if it didn't, I changed it to what I like. Maybe the best way I can explain this is I have a husband who still plays Dungeons and Dragons twice a month with his friends. You know, he is a grown man. They are all grown ass men who play Dungeons and Dragons twice a month. And I also grew up with four older brothers who would play Dungeons and Dragons almost every week. They would like sit on top of the pool table in the basement with their, so like I'd sit on the stairs and listen to their adventures, like the monsters that they were fighting and the magic they were up against and the treasure that they would get. And I've personally never loved to play role-playing type games because I want the story to be structured better. And they just put it out there and then they go away. And I'm like, no, There's an opportunity for a theme here. There's an opportunity for character growth. What do you mean this happened and nothing came of it? You know, like, I respect story arcs way too much to be satisfied as part of a gaming team. So it inspired me. It's part of my roots from my childhood. It's all these monsters and everything, but I want more, which is where the books come in, whether they're somebody else's books or mine. But I can't even pretend for a minute that that hasn't like played a huge part in the kind of world I wanted to make.
So I would love to talk with you a little bit about like your writing style, like your prose. It's been super fun. I want to definitely hear more about the characters in the world. But to me, when we were, because Courtney and I listened to audiobooks, when we were listening to the audiobook, your writing sounded very melodic and it had like this like really delightful cadence to it. So I guess my question for you is, what influenced your prose for this particular book?
I think that is like the nicest thing that you could say to me, because I am simultaneously a sentence level snob that I don't want to read books that I don't think are beautiful on the sentence level. And I don't just mean beautiful. I mean like easy to read beautiful. I think you can take poetic prose too far and it distracts from the story, but like clunky sentences, that kind of thing, it will pull me out of the story. So I'm like, oh, yeah, I'm a snob. And I hate that, because I think I do sometimes miss out on really good stories because I couldn't get past the sentences. So this exists as a truth, while simultaneously, I feel like that's the thing I struggle with the most when I write. Like, I'm constantly wrangling my sentences into something worth reading. When I'm drafting, if you went through my draft right now, you will find dozens of instances where I have like a bracket and AWK for like awkward, just as a note to myself, because I cannot move forward unless I know that I will relook at that sentence later and consider that it might be a little awkwardly stated. So it's like super important to me as a reader. I'm also a huge audiobook person, love audio. I don't feel like it comes like naturally to me. Like, I feel like I really have to work for it and work for shorter sentences and clearer sentences and not having 14 subjects happening in one sentence. I suppose if it comes from anywhere, it comes from sheer determination. But thank you, because I'm never quite sure that I'm there.
Yeah, I loved it. I really love like epic fantasy and language that is very easily digestible, but there's something delightful when there's like I said, like that cadence or something that the like the sentences kind of have this almost like, again, a melodic quality. So I loved it. I appreciate it. I was curious if that was intentional.
You know, I wonder if some of that just comes from being such an auditory person, like loving audiobooks. It's not, I'll dictate. I don't use dictation software, that I'll just talk into my phone and record it and then type later. I'll catch myself saying sentences out loud as I write them, because the sound of it does matter to me. I mentioned in your Writerly podcast that I went through a poet phase in high school. You know, like the sound of words matters to me. For some people, I don't know that words are always something on the page and something that are experienced in like that black and white form and not necessarily something they hear in their mind. And for me, the hearing it is important. So maybe it's just if there's any success in that vein, it comes from just being somebody who really enjoys that.
I would have honestly thought that it just came naturally to you, because it just seemed like, I don't know, when reading it, it was just so beautiful. And the narrators that y'all had, I really enjoy the narration. There are some audiobooks where they're just total shit. And I'm like, I want to finish this, but I literally can't. But that was not this book. Like, it was great narration.
She did a really good job. I was really happy with it. My husband does audio mostly. I mean, like, we have kids and we drive and do chores, and audio is awesome for that. Who wants to fold laundry without a book in your ears, right?
Hell no.
He listened to both of the books. And when we were coming back from a book event at a small bookstore a couple hours from me, he was finishing listening to book two. I was like, I can listen to it. Yeah, just you can finish listening to it. I'll be fine. Oh my God. I was like repeated cringe at sentences I desperately want to reach in and rewrite. Like, this is why I'm not allowed to open books after I publish them. Because, and honestly, this is why deadlines are so important, because you can rewrite and rewrite and rewrite. And there does truly come a point where you're not writing a better book. You are just writing a different book. And I have to remind myself of that.
I know that I already kind of touched on this a little bit, but These Hollow Vows is very different from the other books, your contemporary romances, such as the Black Hawk Boys series. And I'm curious, and well, Meg is as well, what made you want to write fantasy? And have you always been interested in writing in more than one genre?
I honestly always thought that I would probably end up writing both romance and women's fiction. And I, you know, have ideas, I play with them, and then it wouldn't happen. And then I had a period of time, 2018, the world's a dumpster fire, personal life's a little complicated and difficult, and I fell down the fantasy rabbit hole. Like, I could not get enough. I hadn't really read a lot since my urban fantasy binging back in the late aughts, you know, like 2008, 2009, like urban fantasy, like devouring all of it. And now we would call that contemporary fantasy. Like, it was a thing before. We're just giving it a new label. Something you find happens a lot if you stick around publishing long enough. Yeah, so contemporary fantasy, I'd like devoured tons of back in the day. And through this phase of my life, I needed that other world. And maybe because it was a bigger escape, but also because I felt like I tackle a lot of very big internal issues with my romances. And in 2018, I needed to tackle, both for myself and, I don't know, for other people too, something larger than something that just lives within. Everything external affects what's internal, but everything external was too big for the single person at that moment in time to be able to fix, right? Like, the, I can adjust the way I see the world, but the world's still a dumpster fire. So I really think that that's like what made me like glom on to everything I could get my hands on. And then I was just obsessed and couldn't quite let it go. I thought maybe I'd throw up something on Wattpad and see what happened. But then I like gave my agent a one sentence pitch and was like, what do you think? And he was like, yep, I've got editors in mind right away who would want to read that. So I thought, I'll give it a shot. We'll see what happens. A little aside for the writers around, I wrote a book called If It's Only Love, right between writing. I think it was between. I was up against trad deadlines for the These Hollow Vows duology. And I had a very small window in which to write this contemporary romance that was going to, at the time I thought, be the last in my contemporary romance series. So what I did, which you could argue I always do, I always choose the tropes I like most, the themes I like most. But I made it totally 100% my candy. Like, I need to sit down and knock out words every day, and I need to get through this sucker, and it needs to feel good because I don't have time. I don't have time for this to drag out. I'm very limited because I'm trying this whole trad thing. That book has sold more copies than any other book I've ever written. It's the one people talk to me about the most when they come up to me. It's a sixth book in a series, right? But it's, man, I'm telling you, if it is yummy to you, there is a group of people out there it's going to be yummy too. But I love going back and forth, right? I love having the magic and the bigger epic world level problems. And then I also like going back to the stories that are more like internal, that really deeply personal journey versus the external bigger journey, which is reflected by the personal journey, of course. I love doing both. And to me, it's what I needed to do at the time. It felt terrible. Like, it felt like the stupidest business decision I could make, because I finally felt like I had my footing in contemporary romance. I finally felt like I could put out a new book and be pretty confident it was going to do well. And then here I am, like, well, I can't write as many romances now because I'm going to write YA fantasy. It seemed like a silly business decision, but I just couldn't resist. I couldn't resist.
I'm honestly so glad you did it. Like, I'm so glad you did it. And I'm so excited that we're going to get more. And I'm just going to say, another two books is not going to be enough. So you just need to go ahead and start thinking about the next duology you're going to do after the one that's coming out in 2024. Just saying.
So many book ideas. Like, you know this. There's never enough time. I told my agent the other day, like, oh, after this, I want to write, spoiler here. And he was like, that sounds great. I can sell that. And I'm like, yeah, but I want to write a lot of things.
Exactly.
I'm not sure I can choose. But yeah, I appreciate that. It's been terrifying and humbling and exciting. It's been more than I could have hoped for. Like, I wrote these Hollow Vows in Comic Sans, honestly, y'all. I feel so like not smart enough to write fantasy, right? Like, these people who write fantasy are so smart, and the worlds they put in their stories are like so epic. And I'm like, I was feeling very in my head about it. And I was drafting it 2020. I don't know. What is time? 2019. I think I was drafting it. At the time, there was a thing going around Twitter. If you're struggling, if you feel like you have writer's block, write in Comic Sans, because no one can take themselves seriously in Comic Sans. I wrote that draft in Comic Sans. I did not switch back to Times New Roman until I was revising, like pre-editor. I did not send it to an editor. I take myself a little too seriously for that. But it was very intimidating to me to try to write something. And at this point, how many romances had I written? Like over 30? And so I felt very comfortable. I know how to tell a romance. I know how to write a romance novel. I know how to tell this kind of story. Do I know how to tell this other kind of story? Is my writing strong enough? Is
yes.
My world, you know, you have a thousand different like ways that you can question yourself. And I thought, well, what can it hurt? I'll write it in Comic Sans. And I did.
I love that. I really do. There's always this thing that's like, oh, romance writers, they can't do world building. And I'm like, hold on. I think Lexi Ryan, Rebecca Yarros, they're freaking killing it right now in fantasy world building. So please do not discredit the romance authors, guys. We got it going on.
And I'm like huge romance fangirl. I have zero patience for people who are like, I don't really want to be writing romance. I'm like, then get the fuck out, because there are so many people who want to. Like, get out. I don't have time for you. It's like the biggest turnoff. Like, there are a couple authors that I'm just like, I can't read that person because they said this thing. And that's like my biggest, it's a peeve for me, right? I have so much respect for romance, so much respect for romance authors, but clearly I internalized an awful lot of that. Because when I sat down to write something different, I was like, but can I? Like, am I capable? Do I have the tools that I need? And I still struggle with it. You know, I'm like getting into the second book of the new duology. I was struggling so much. And I'm like, I think maybe I shouldn't be writing fantasy. Like, maybe this is it. Like, I just need to get this book done and just be done. But I can't do it. And he's like, but you already have. I don't understand. You know, like, I thought you were here, right? Like, when that happened, you know? So, but I don't know. It just gets in your head, like, bad, y'all. You're going to struggle with it. You're going to struggle with imposter syndrome. And I know Becca Stein likes to say imposters don't get imposter syndrome, but that doesn't mean you're not going to feel it in a big way. And Rebecca Yarros and I have a take on fantasy. We're not the only ones, just the two of us. We're in a special club. No, we're not the only ones, but our take on fantasy is very accessible to people who haven't been epic fantasy readers their whole life. And there are going to be people who read it, who read our stuff, who don't find what they want because they are more drawn to like more Tolkien-esque kind of style. And that's fine. Like, there are an awful lot of readers out there and they want very different things. And it's so cool to have people trying out fantasy who didn't before because they feel like it's accessible from some different authors who maybe came from romance or maybe came from a different background or who just have a different kind of voice. And like, objectively, I'm like, this is awesome. This is the best thing that could happen to fantasy. But like, when it's my stuff, I'm like, but maybe I don't belong, you know? Like, it's just real. Like, it's part of the experience of being a writer. There's always something to be unsure about, but yeah, it can be pretty intense.
One thing that I talk about on my YouTube channel, iWriterly, is how a lot of times I've noticed that it's the newer authors who've written a first draft, never edited it, not once, submitted to literary agents, and they think the world of draft one, first book ever, first draft. And while that's amazing that they finished it and all those different things, I feel like then the more you write, and theoretically, you know, the more skill that you would have developed as writing, like, you know, writing more books and character development and the rest of it, then the imposter syndrome kicks in. It's very interesting that, like, you know, kind of the farther in your career.
Yeah, it seems backwards. Yeah. And it's so true of writing, because, like, the better we get as writers, the less satisfied we are with what we write, because we see so many things going on. And I actually just had this conversation with my agent yesterday, because he's like, so how are you feeling about everything? How are you feeling about the second series? How are you feeling about? And I was like, I'm kind of ready for it to go up on NetGalley, because I have gotten to the point in my career that I feel like it's terrible. I don't want to need external validation, but I just don't ever feel like I know if my books are any good anymore. Like, I need somebody else to decide. And that's kind of how it works in the real world anyway. We don't really get to follow people around and be like, but it's really good, right? Like, you really like it. Oh, you didn't like this. You must have missed this. But let's talk about what's really happening in this scene so you can appreciate. Like, that's not how it works. The real world is other people get to decide. I think I'm ready. I don't know. Maybe I'm not ready. I'm a little nervous. It's different because I do have the dual protagonist. So I have two points of view, and I'm doing a lot. So, but it's true. The better we get, the less satisfied we are with what we produce. But I do, like, objectively, I'm like, yeah, I can't deny that this book that I wrote last year is head and shoulders above this book I wrote in 2012. Like, it just is.
I understand on, like, the writer level, like, how you kind of get in your head, like, the more you write, you're like, but is this good enough? Are they gonna like this? Even if people are like, oh, no, it's great. And you're like, but are they lying to me right now? Like, for me, I'm always like, are they just trying to not be truthful? Like, do you mean it? Or are you just saying that so my feelings don't get hurt? But I can say that, you know, your world building was fantastic. I loved the scene where they're, like, making love in this cave, and then, like, this galaxy lights. Like, it gives me chills just thinking about it. And I'm like, that is just so creative. I am not worthy. Lexi Ryan kills it with fantasy.
I love that because that is, like, a very specific example of a moment where I'm like, should I cut that out? Is that too over the top? And, you know, we constantly have these moments when we're writing where we have to decide if we want to, like, put this kind of different weird thing out there, or if we want to pull it back. So thank you for saying that, because that was, like, a very specific moment for me that I'm like, ooh, is this too?
No, I loved it, because, like, you know, they were outside the bounds of magic. Like, there's no magic in this place. And then when they're together, they create the magic together. I was just so like, this is so good. But yeah, there were several scenes like that where I was just like, man, this is just so beautiful. And, like, when she met Finn in her dreams and she's like, how are you doing this? And he's like, it's not me, it's you, it's your magic that's doing it. I'm like, yes, the power is within you, you're both dark. Anyway, sorry to no, but it was
thank you.
Yes, it was very good. And I'm so looking forward to the second duology. I really am, because I wasn't ready to leave the world. The big thing right now is Fourth Wing and Fourth Wing this. And I'm like, yeah, but have you met Lexi Ryan? I mean, Rebecca's amazing, and I loved Fourth Wing, but I also
I knew that book was gonna be good.
Yeah, they're on the same level for me, though, like, honestly. Like, if you like Fourth Wing, you need to go read these Hollow Vows, because they have the same kind of feel. And I think it's because romance authors, like, you really understand that human connection with love and, like, want and need and, like, being the underdog. And I really appreciated that. And it's going to be great. You're going to be world famous next year. And I'm going to be like, Facebook friend.
I could talk about Fourth Wing all day. Rebecca sent me an early copy last November. And I told anyone who would listen, including my friend group who does not care about publishing beyond how it affects me, this book is going to be huge. This book is going to be huge. Like, I just wanted everyone to know before it came out that I could see it. Like, it was like a pride thing. I need it. I am, like, so grateful that I emailed my agent. I emailed my publisher. I like my editor and my UK editor and my old editor who left HMH a long time ago, all of them knew about Fourth Wing before it came out. And they're all like, of course, these are trad people. So they're like, oh, who's publishing it? It has all of the yum. I'm telling you, find your yum, dive into it, like roll around in it, let it be sticky. And amazing things happen.
I'm going to quote you with that. Find your yum, Lexi Ryan. All right. Well, Lexi, thank you so very much for joining us today to chat about your amazing novel. We really appreciated it. As you can probably tell, we had a fantastic time reading it. And we can't wait for what's next for you.
Thank you.
Thanks so much for joining us today, romance lovers. Don't forget that you are the main character of your story.
So go out there and spread some pages, live your happily ever after, and keep it spicy.
See you all next time.